Content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Fred Woodward from the North Carolina Reading Service, formerly known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from The Week magazine, the best of the U.S. and international media each week. The North Carolina Reading Service thanks Charlie and Carolyn Kerr for their support of today's Reading of the Week magazine. This program honors Charlie's sister, Bonnie Cassidy, who continues to be a true inspiration to their family. We're reading this week from the September 20th, 2019 issue of The Week magazine. The cover drawing this week shows British Prime Minister Boris Johnson. He is standing in the corner of a wood-paneled room. The door is boarded up closed. There's a Brexit sign over the doorway. And he's been painting the floor blue, and he looks to have painted himself into a corner. The title is Cornered. Has Boris Johnson left himself with no Brexit options? And I think we get that story as one of the columns, but we'll start with two of the shorter main stories this week. Death and devastation in Bahamas after Dorian. What happened? More than 70,000 Bahamians were left homeless and pleading for food, water, and other assistance after Hurricane Dorian's Category 5 winds flattened two of the country's islands, leaving them strewn with beached boats, splintered houses, and dozens, possibly hundreds, of bodies. Amid reports that Bahamians were not getting enough emergency aid and were trying to flee the Abacos and Grand Bahama Islands, President Trump said the U.S. would not welcome evacuees without proper documentation, warning of the risk of admitting very bad people, including drug dealers and gang members. Hours earlier, Customs and Border Protection Acting Chief Mark Morgan blamed confusion after more than 100 survivors without U.S. visas were ordered off a ferry traveling to Fort Lauderdale. He said Bahamians could enter whether you have travel documents or not. Adding to the confusion, the Department of Homeland Security later said evacuees traveling by ship required valid passports and travel visas, while visa waivers could be granted to some who fly to the U.S. Dorian left parts of the Bahamas looking like nuclear bombs had been dropped on them, said Mark Green, head of the U.S. Agency for International Development. USAID pledged $2.8 million in humanitarian assistance, and the United Nations, $1 million. While Dorian mostly missed the U.S., some 135,000 people on North Carolina's Outer Banks lost power and hundreds of homes were flooded. In the Bahamas, relief efforts face immense logistical challenges with airports and roads torn apart. It is impossible to prepare for an apocalypse, said Bahamian Health Minister Dwayne Sands. What the columnist said. Even in the wake of disaster, Trump can't curb his scorn of people from largely black countries, said Eugene Scott in WashingtonPost.com. We got a taste of this bigotry in 2018 when the president reportedly told a bipartisan group of lawmakers that he didn't want any more immigrants from shithole countries, adding, "Why do we need more Haitians?" For our president, skin color seems to be a deciding factor in whether a person fleeing devastation and misery deserves aid and sanctuary. Trump could own this moment, said the Washington Examiner in an editorial. He should go to the port at Palm Beach and hug the Bahamian families coming off the boat, telling them, "Welcome to America." After all, Trump has repeatedly promised that a big, beautiful gate would be an essential part of his border wall. By welcoming neighbors in dire need, he would send an important message to the world that we are a country of both laws and mercy. America used to display its greatness when other countries were struck by natural disasters, said Mona Chirin in TheBulwark.com. After a tsunami smashed into Indonesia in 2004, President George W. Bush sent a flotilla of more than 30 ships loaded with aid. When an earthquake shattered Haiti in 2010, President Obama deployed the Marines to clear debris and rebuild infrastructure. But in the wake of Dorian, all Trump could say was, "We are sending crews to help. Where are the hospital ships and the food and water?" His smallness has become our smallness. Trump pushes out National Security Hawk John Bolton. What happened? National Security Advisor John Bolton was forced out this week after repeatedly opposing President Trump's overtures to American adversaries such as North Korea, Russia, Iran, and the Taliban. Trump said Bolton was way out of line with the administration's foreign policy goals and had made some very big mistakes. For his part, the 70-year-old former ambassador to the United Nations insisted he'd offered Trump his resignation without prompting. "I will have my say in due course," Bolton said. His ouster comes after he earned Trump's ire for backing a failed effort to topple Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro, opposing direct talks with North Korean despot Kim Jong-un, lobbying European allies against readmitting Russia into the G7, and pushing for a military strike on Iran. The National Security Advisor's dissent from Trump's own initiatives had become so frequent that he refused to defend the Trump's foreign policy on TV. "The president should have people he trusts and values," said Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, who reportedly was no longer on speaking terms with Bolton. Bolton's ouster had been rumored for months, ever since Trump met Kim in North Korea on June 29th, while Bolton visited Mongolia. His exit follows the implosion of a planned peace summit with the Taliban at Camp David. Bolton is said to have incensed others in the administration, including Vice President Mike Pence, by leaking his vehement and ultimately successful opposition to the meeting. Senator Chuck Schumer called Bolton's ouster the latest example of Trump's government by chaos approach. What the columnist said. "Good riddance," said Fred Kaplan at Slate.com. "By any measure, Bolton will go down as one of the worst national security advisors in White House history. The notorious hawk favored bombing North Korea, regime change in Iran, and scuttling every international treaty the U.S. has signed. He also wrecked the National Security Council, the crucial West Wing apparatus that provides the president with analysis and options on foreign policy issues. Bolton preferred to put forth his own recommendations based on his hardline ideology." America's enemies are surely delighted at Bolton's departure, said the Wall Street Journal in an editorial. During his 17-month tenure, Bolton provided a rare internal restraint on President Trump's inconstant and transactional security instincts. Just consider that his final act as National Security Advisor was sparing the president the substantial embarrassment of engaging the Taliban in talks on the week of the anniversary of 9/11. Not every security issue can be boiled down to a negotiation or the art of the deal. "John Bolton owes this nation one last service," said David Frum in TheAtlantic.com. "As a patriot, he must warn fellow citizens that this president is unfit for the job, morally, intellectually, psychologically. He should tell the truth about what he saw, all of it, not just adjectives and conclusions, but the actual details of Trump's self-dealing, his inattention and ignorance, and the danger he poses to America by remaining in office." Controversy of the week. Sharpiegate. Is Trump at war with reality? Every day the president supplies fresh evidence of how spectacularly ignorant, vainglorious, and obsessive he can be, says Eugene Robinson in the Washington Post. But Trump's Sharpie doctored map of Hurricane Dorian's path should make it into the Smithsonian. The saga began last week when Trump tweeted that Alabama and four other southern states will most likely be hit much harder by the hurricane than previously forecast. Dorian, by that point, was already veering north, and the Birmingham branch of the National Weather Service quickly reassured residents that Alabama will not see any impacts from Dorian. Being constitutionally incapable of admitting even the slightest error, Trump produced an official NWS map of Dorian's likely route onto which someone, he said he didn't know who, had drawn a crude loop in black Sharpie that extended Dorian's path to touch a corner of Alabama. Given the actual devastation wreaked by the hurricane, Trump's Sharpie hijinks might not seem like a big deal, said Michael Cohen in the Boston Globe. But this bizarre episode comes from the same deep flaw that led Trump to insist that millions of illegal immigrants voted in the 2016 election, that North Korea's tyrant Kim Jong-un is willing to denuclearize, that Russian election interference was a hoax, and that China is paying the tariffs his trade war has imposed on Americans. Trump's frightening inability to accept and acknowledge reality is a recipe for disaster. If this story demonstrates anything, said Brad Slager in RedState.com, it's the media's increasingly desperate vendetta against this president. Sharpiegate got round-the-clock coverage on CNN, yet few of the sneering pundits will admit that CNN's own weather personalities had themselves mentioned Alabama as a possible location for impact from hurricane activity. Trump wasn't wrong, said Joseph Curl in WashingtonTimes.com. As Dorian moved toward our shores, early projections showed it coming ashore in Florida, with parts of Alabama in the storm's cone of uncertainty. Yet for simply relaying this information to the public, Trump is being pilloried in the press as an unhinged tyrant. Just when you think the media can't go any lower, they do. Trump was indeed wrong, said Chas Danner in nymag.com. By the time of his fateful tweet, forecasters had said that Alabama was conclusively out of danger, and he needlessly frightened state residents. More troubling still is that, to hide his error, Trump clumsily altered an official weather map, a crime punishable by 90 days in jail, and then ordered government staff to cover for him. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross reportedly threatened to fire officials at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration if they didn't support Trump's original tweet, which several reluctantly did. That triggered a fierce backlash among forecasters inside and outside of NOAA, with one 40-year Weather Service employee saying he'd never, ever felt political pressure on a GD weather forecast. He added, "We're in true banana republic territory." No one should be surprised, said Peter Winter in TheAtlantic.com. The extreme narcissism, detachment from reality, and penchant for gaslighting that prompted Trump to doctor that weather map and then bully NOAA forecasters has been on display every day of his presidency, and in fact throughout his life. Under the pressures of the presidency, his disordered mind is getting worse. For all its pathos, the Sharpie incident is an urgent reminder that Donald Trump isn't well. Time for our Good Week, Bad Week segment. It was a good week for comebacks, with news that vinyl records are on pace to outsell compact discs for the first time since 1986. Fueled by hipsters and audiophiles, the vinyl resurgence coincides with a slump in sales of CDs, which are losing market share to online streaming services. It was a good week for volunteerism. After a passenger on an EasyJet flight from England to Spain stepped up when the scheduled pilot failed to appear and flew the plane himself. The ununiformed hero, Michael Bradley, was an off-duty EasyJet pilot, and the substitution was fully in line with regulations, EasyJet said. And it was a good week for Trump 2024, with a prediction by Brad Parscale, President Trump's campaign manager, that the Trumps will be a dynasty that lasts for decades. Parscale said Don Jr., Ivanka, and Jared Kushner were amazing people with amazing capabilities. But it was a bad week for drug dealers. After a couple strolling a Florida beach after Hurricane Dorian found a $30,000 brick of cocaine labeled with the word Diamante, which means diamond in Spanish. Another beachgoer then found a duffel bag filled with 15 bricks of cocaine. It was a bad week for Nessie. After an exhaustive study of DNA in water samples taken from Scotland's Loch Ness, found no evidence of a prehistoric reptile inhabiting the loch. It's possible, researchers said, that what people are seeing is a very large eel. And finally, it was a bad week for voter choice, with the news that Democratic Representative Raul Ruiz of California will be challenged in the next election by Republican Raul Ruiz. I'll say this, said the Republican Ruiz, who at 57 is 10 years his opponent's senior. I had the name first. And before we move on, here's a short piece. Fewer Americans insured in 2018. The number of Americans with health insurance declined last year, the first time since the Affordable Care Act became law in 2010. The Census Bureau reported this week. An estimated 27.5 million people, 8.5% of the population, lacked insurance, 1.9 million more than in 2017. The jump came mainly as the result of cuts in coverage by Medicaid and the Children's Health Insurance Program. Experts said it also reflected the Trump administration's efforts to subvert the ACA, including cutting the budget used to promote the program and eliminating a subsidy for insurers that held down premiums, repealing the tax penalty for going without insurance, the so-called individual mandate, may also have been a factor. About 15% of the country was uninsured before the ACA. We're on the briefing page. The title of the article this week is Video Games and Violence. Recent mass shooters gunned for high scores. Are violent video games to blame? Why the focus on gaming? As the country struggles to find an explanation for mass shootings, many elected officials have pointed a finger at violent video games. One of the top video game genres is first-person shooter, where players get points for stalking and slaughtering other people. Terminology from these games is being used by some of the angry young men who have perpetrated the waves of massacres that have stunned Americans. In April, after a 19-year-old indicated on the message board 8chan that he was going to shoot up a synagogue in Poway, California, another 8chan user urged him to get a high score, as in kill a record number of people. Many recent shooters have idolized Anders Breivik, the killer of 77 Norwegians in 2011, who said he trained by playing Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2. In August, a 21-year-old white nationalist who killed 22 people in El Paso, Texas, posted a manifesto about an invasion of Hispanics in which he also referenced Call of Duty. In response, President Trump blamed gruesome and grisly video games. How violent are today's games? Grand Theft Auto, one of the top-selling franchises ever with 285 million games sold, is notorious for letting players free roam around a city based on Los Angeles and kill random people. The latest installment equips players with Beretta-like pistols, AK-47-like assault rifles, and an arsenal's worth of other guns. In 2003, two teenage brothers said they were acting out Grand Theft Auto 3 when they fatally shot a random motorist in Tennessee. In the gamer world, games like Call of Duty are hailed for their realistic weaponry. Are shooters usually gamers? some are. The Columbine High School killers played the first-person shooter Doom. But just four of the perpetrators of 33 mass murders at U.S. schools between 1980 and 2018 were known to be video gamers. Patrick Markey, a Villanova University psychology professor who studies video games, points out that about 70% of U.S. high school students show interest in violent games, but just a tiny majority engage in real violence. Still, the exceptions are disturbing. Adam Lanza, the 20-year-old who killed 26 people at an elementary school in Newtown, Connecticut, was obsessed with violent video games, including one called School Shooting. Nicholas Cruz, the shooter at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, played 8 to 15 hours of video games a day, his neighbor said. It was kill, 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 blow up something, and kill some more, all day. Do games inspire violence? About 40% of Americans think so. Yet researchers have spent decades mostly failing to demonstrate such a link. Last year, German researchers divided 77 participants into three groups. One group played Grand Theft Auto 5 every day for 2 months. Another group played the nonviolent Sims 3. And a control group didn't play any video games. Researchers then measured participants' aggression levels, interpersonal abilities, anxiety, and impulsivity, and found no significant difference. A Dartmouth College analysis of 24 studies that involved 17,000 adolescents came to a somewhat different conclusion. It found that playing violent video games did correlate with increased physical aggression, particularly among children already prone to antisocial behavior. Tim Winter, president of the Parents Television Council, argues that moderate consumption of violent video games may have no effect, but playing them for hours a day can have a cumulative negative effect on susceptible minds and legitimize mass violence. What do critics propose? States and the federal government have had limited ability to regulate video games since 2011, when the Supreme Court struck down on First Amendment grounds a California law restricting the sale of ultra-violent games to minors. Justice Antonin Scalia said those games were no more graphic than Grimm's fairy tales, calling the law the latest episode in a long series of failed attempts to censor violent entertainment for minors. As a result of that ruling, politicians who blame violent video games for mass shootings can offer little in the way of policy solutions. In February, Pennsylvania lawmakers proposed a 10% sales tax on violent video games. The revenue would be distributed to school workers to install bulletproof glass, metal detectors, and other safety measures. What is gaming's defense? Advocates say video games have served as a scapegoat for